I said, oh, Lord Jesus, it's a fire.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley. It's the 5 o'clock fire.
It is 5 o'clock. Congratulations. Hopefully you're off work. Luckily for you, old Dirty Show and Psycho T, a.k.a. T-Mill, a.k.a. the man who lives in the red.
Son of a bitch. Oh, wow. Damn. That was uncalled for.
That was harsh.
I am sorry.
What's wrong with you?
Were you in the red yesterday?
Yes!
Okay, I am sorry. Very accurate, but I am sorry.
Two for five.
Sorry, money bags. Money bags in the building, Tyler Milner. Luckily for you, we have the latest. And the latest is this, fellas. And we talked about it earlier. Dana Brown, the general manager of the Astros, said that they are confident that they're going to get something done. They were looking at a bat as a priority and maybe a number three starter. We've started to hear that, even bullpen action. This reported by The Athletic, Chandler Rome, says that Dylan Cease, he is a starter for the San Diego Padres, has emerged as a primary target for the Houston Astros. Dylan Cease has emerged as a primary target for the Houston Astros. Dylan Cease, now.
It turned me on.
Now, listen. When I read you his numbers from this year, like, you're going to be like, oh, hold on. No, I don't know. I don't know about that. But
it's a fair disclaimer.
It's very, very similar to Kikuchi.
What'd you say?
All right. It's very, very similar to Yusei Kikuchi. This when they brought him over last year. Dylan Cease has 22 starts. He is a 3-10 record, 118 in a third innings, which he does rack up innings and pitches. That is something that he's normally done. His ERA is nearing 4.79, so that is not great, but he does have 153 strikeouts, which he has always been a strikeout guy. He has been over 200 strikeouts the last 4 years, including three with the White Sox, where he was their ace and a Cy Young candidate if he didn't win it in 2022. Last year, he was 14-11, 190 innings, 3.47 ERA. He is somebody that has excellent stuff. Excellent stuff, even though he has struggled this year. But he is a guy, to me, that is very, very similar to a Kikuchi. A guy in Kikuchi, we saw his numbers didn't look great in Toronto, but he got over here, and he is somebody who the pitching staff was able to work with. And he always, it wasn't a stuff thing, it was other stuff. So he was able to turn it around here with the Astros. I think they're maybe looking at a similar thing with Dylan Cease, who has been a very successful pitcher in the past. That, to me, would be a kind of move that you would look at, Clint, that says, all right, we feel like that's a guy that could be a third starter for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you throw Dylan Cease into the mix with all the guys you got coming back, I think you could potentially be on to something. I'm not real concerned with those numbers. I mean, obviously, you laid out the Kikuchi deal last year that worked out, I mean, hugely in our advantage. So I'd be fine with that. But that's the level I'm talking about, man. You throw him in the mix with McCullers and Javier and all these guys, Arrigetti. Now you're on to something. Now you're on to having three or four guys that could give you a legit chance to win come playoff time or even, you know, October, September, October type time.
It's an odd situation, dude, because the Padres, Clint, they're in the playoffs right now. They have a 2-game lead in the wild card. They're 9 games over 500. And they are potentially trading one of their starters, but I think this is kind of where the league is right now. The interesting part is, since they're in the race and they'd be willing to trade Dylan Cease, it would be a wonder of what they're actually looking for in return. Are they looking for a ready-made player, a guy that we see right now up with the big club, that would be a curious thing to look at to see what it would take to get him. But General Manager Dana Brown said that that's what they were looking to get, a third-level starter, and that might happen. So that's one to watch, a primary trade target for the Astros, Dylan Cease. Tonight, the Astros, however, don't get to throw a guy like Dylan Cease out there. And when you think about Dylan Cease and you think about those numbers, like you said, you start to think, all right, we got Jason Alexander tonight. That's probably why you would want to make a move like that. But they are looking to end this five-game losing streak, Clint, and they play the Nationals tonight. Lineup tonight, Tremel in left field, Altuve's the DH, Walker, Cam Smith back in the lineup. Jacob Melton gets another night in the five spot in center field. Diaz is behind the plate. No Caratini in the lineup tonight. Dubon's at third. Whitcomb's at second. And Zach Short is the shortstop tonight. That's the starting lineup. And Clint, they have got to get a way to end this thing. This lead is now three games over the Mariners, and the Rangers are now four games back as they are coming on. This thing could get really, really tight in a hurry if they don't snap out of this.
Well, it's never been more true. We got to stop the bleed in some way, shape, or form. Five straight, four to the Las Vegas A's and one to the Nationals. I mean, you got to stop the bleeding somehow. You couldn't do it with Framber Valdez pitching a gem, so let's see if you can do it with Jason Alexander. We'll see.
Yeah, so big one tonight, and see if, as you said, man, maybe they can give some run support to Jason Alexander, knowing that they will probably need to help in that regard. So big one tonight as the Nationals look to come in and win this series. If they win tonight, they will have taken the series against the Astros at home, and that is something they are looking to avoid. So get ready tonight. Big one tonight. Hopefully we're talking about an Astros W when we come in tomorrow.
5 o'clock fire.
All right, training camp day six. As the boys got going, a second straight day in pads, D'Amico Ryan spoke about today's effort. Here he is talking about day six of training camp.
Hey, you see it, you know, things evening out more when you put the pads on. You know, defense kind of had the advantage there. Early on, we weren't in pads. Defense make a lot of plays. And now just see things balancing themselves out. Offense is making plays daily. Our quarterbacks are doing a really nice job just placing the football in the right spot. And our receivers are making some really tough, contested catches. And that's what we want to be. We want to be a tough, physical football team. And you can't lose sight of that play on the outside from the receivers, the DBs, how those guys play. That's the makings of a really physical team. So Jaden Higgins, he stepped up, made some really nice catches. Noel Hutchinson has done a really good job this year playing physical, really doing a great job at the catch point as well. We got a lot of guys on the offensive side who are getting, you know, really better, and it really jumps out in that receiver room to me.
Yep, Nick Chubb, I'm sure a part of that as well. Clint, he said it felt like it was evening out a little bit with the pads on. Is that how you saw things as well?
Yeah, look, I think it was a better day, a more even day. I think to start practice, I think it was Kalen Bullock. He got an interception. So that's not the way you want to start on the offensive side of the football. It is exactly how you want to start on the defensive side of the football. And then from there, it seemed like things came a little bit easier for all of the quarterbacks in the offense. The protection seemed to be a tad bit better. There was some of the quick game there, so they were able to get the football out on time and give themselves a chance. And so, yeah, I would say today was a better day offensively in terms of just seeing some level of success. Now, there's a bunch of penalties on the offensive line that were a problem that I think I would expect to hear D'Amico, you know, hoping to clean up, and Nick Caley to clean up here pretty quick. But I would say today was a better day. I wouldn't get too carried away with it, but I would say today, if you're comparing it to the rough start to training camp for the offense or the slow start to training camp for the offense, today was better.
Yeah, and I think that's for Texans fans. They want to see – you want to start to get to see reports that, all right, you know, the offense has done some things. Things were looking good. I do want to get to the O-line here in a second. But
the arrow's pointed up.
Yeah, I know it, Cal, but – I know also some things we saw. It was a lot of three-step drops, but There was a lot of slot play. And Christian Kirk, even John Metchie got involved. And that was something that looked pretty real, that looked good today, was them versus some of the nickels for the Texans going up against Petrie and company. Yeah. They were able to do some good things today.
Yeah, Petrie got beat by Christian Kirk, and it was looked to be a man, and he just ran kind of like that mid-range crosser and just ran away from Petrie the whole way across, and CJ made a good throw. Now, the Metchie catch, I thought it was on a nickel defender. It was actually on an inside defender. Just in more of a, I think it was probably more of a little bit of a zone coverage kind of deal. But nonetheless, Metchie, he did get behind the defense, made a great catch at one point. Higgins had a 50-50 ball go up. Davis Mills threw at a 50-50 ball. He went up and got it. It was a great catch. I think there were plays made on the offensive side of the football and the quarterbacks. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I think overall, I mean, if you're just evaluating quarterbacks. Now, I've said it before in today's show. I've seen more of the third and fourth string quarterback than I care to see in training camp. But really, the quarterback play overall has been really impressive. I mean, when the pocket is not collapsing around them, you know, the quarterback play overall has been pretty impressive. I know C.J. Stroud's thrown two or three interceptions that were suspect. One of those was after a pressure where it probably would have been a sack, so it wouldn't have counted. I think CJ may have shown some frustration from time to time, but overall the quarterbacks have thrown it well and accurate and on time, and there's been two or three really, really good over the top pinpoint throws that we've seen.
Yeah. So but that's a good look, because Christian Kirk is someone that I think, especially early on, this offense is going to need.
Absolutely.
And especially that spot against slots, against those are places they may be able to take advantage of things. So that is a big deal to watch him. Overall, it does seem like the offense did have its best day of camp, which, yes, it is not to, as Clint said, not to just lose your mind and say, oh boy, here we go, five-headed monster, they're about to go off. No.
Yes!
But for a team that's installing a new system, that has a new OC, that has a lot of new parts and pieces that they're trying to put together with this offense, the steps forward, especially against this defense, are big things. So training camp day six, as they inch closer to try to get this offense put together.
5 o'clock fire.
All right, a lot of conversation happening in going from the college football to the NFL draft situation, a lot of conversation with the Browns and the connection and the history of their owner, Jimmy Haslam, with the Manning family, and trying to put things together about they want to get their hands on Arch Manning to be the next guy. God, I pray that doesn't happen to you, Arch.
2026 MVP.
That you don't have to go to Cleveland. But Jimmy Haslam said, if you know the Manning family, I would bet that, and I don't know Arch at all, I would bet he stays in college 2 years, Haslam said. So I don't even really think it's worth a discussion. That was Jim Haslam, who was dismissing speculation about him eyeing Texas quarterback Arch Manning in the upcoming draft, as they have the potential to have the number one pick. A couple of things, Clint. One, do you get the feel that Arch will stay multiple years, two more years in college? And are you sure he's going to be like this? Isn't a Trevor Lawrence situation or a Caleb Williams situation where, yeah, man, he's going to be the number one pick when he comes out. Shut up, Tyler. He's going to be the number one pick when he comes out. I don't know that that's the case.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. He doesn't have to do the same things in college that some of those guys you mentioned did to be the number one overall pick. If he just goes out there and plays the quarterback position at a high level, puts up good numbers, wins games, and let's say he's a top five quarterback coming out in the class, he's going to immediately be the number one rated quarterback because his last name's Manning. I mean, that's just the reality of what we're dealing with here. I mean, these teams that are it's a crapshoot when you draft a quarterback at the top of the draft. And if you get a Manning that goes out and proves he's one of the top quarterbacks in college football, and he's coming out and he's got that kind of pedigree and that kind of resume and has been raised that way and knows the game the way that he knows the game, all of those things are going to push him directly to the top of the list. So it's not like he has to go out there and have a Heisman Trophy Joe Burrow type of year in order to be number one overall. It's just not – that's not the world we're dealing with. If he just goes out there and plays well at that level, then he's going to be the number one quarterback in terms of being ranked anyway. I think there is something to be said, though, about the way that he stayed at Texas and didn't transfer, didn't take the money, stayed at Texas, developed. And as we look at, hey, is he a guy that could potentially stay 2 years in college? The answer is yes. Look how he handled it the first time. If he goes out there and he and his team sit down after 1 year and go, hey, you had a good year, but you've got a long way to go. And the NFL isn't the place to necessarily go to develop, so you need another year in college. I could see the Manning family making that decision and him standing at an additional year. Yeah, I don't think he's going to come out just because he would be rated number one. I don't think
really?
That's going to factor into their decision.
Yep, so after this year, if he's the clear cut talked about and yeah, as you said, maybe he doesn't have to be Caleb Williams talent wise and everything. But for whatever reason, they have him rated as the top quarterback and number one pick. You don't think he just automatically comes out for that?
No, I don't. I don't. I mean, I don't. No, I don't think it has any bearing.
I guess Peyton didn't.
I just don't think it has any. A good point. I don't think it has any bearing on the situation. I just think they're going to look at this college thing as a developmental type year, preparing yourself for the league. And by the way, he's making plenty of money at UT, and he's surrounded by talent. There's no reason to run from that situation. So yeah, no, I don't think it has any bearing. Now he may come out, but I don't think it has any bearing on you know that decision being made is where he's ranked.
All right, coming up, did we see after the game a level of frustration that should bring even more concern to the Astros situation than the 5-game losing streak and the struggles they've had here of late? We'll discuss that coming up next.
Say goodnight to the Astros.
It's Texans Training Camp, live from the Mokerum Injury Lawyers Studio. Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, Framber Valdez, he let it out, which you generally don't see. You generally don't see and hear players just publicly... I mean, this hard, and he did it through an interpreter, but I think it's very clear what he was getting to. He was not happy at all with the way that his outfield, his defense was, how they were shifted in a big at-bat last night that led to a run. And in his words... In this thing, he said, I saw the right fielder playing center field. And, you know, we have a center fielder for that. I feel like the right fielder should have been playing right field. I was uncomfortable with that, Valdez said through an interpreter. He also went on to discuss the thoughts of him not understanding why they would be shifted that way. And that you know, it really led to that run. That run should not have been a run, in his opinion. It should have been a guy getting a third base, not home, is what Framber had to say. And he came publicly with this thing to the public. This was not taken care of in the clubhouse, not discussed with the outfielders or whoever. Its job, the outfield coach, or what coach aligns the players where they should be. He didn't go and discuss it with them. He came right out publicly to this. And Clint, to me that seems like a level of frustration that you generally don't see. And I'm wondering, is that something that's pushing this even further? The struggles of the team, and now you look at a situation where not only have you lost 5 in a row. To the A's and the Nationals. Not only have you lost 5 of your last 21, now essentially Framber Valdez is placing blame on somebody else for a run coming across, which ultimately helped the Nationals win the game out publicly. That feels like a real low point potentially for this team.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, I don't have a problem with it. I don't have a problem with you know, the questioning what the hell, because if you look at the steal shot of the shift that was put on, I mean, he's ultimately questioning the call. I don't think anybody was out of position in the sense of where they were told to be, because the entire outfield was all shifted to the left. The entire infield was all shifted to the right. Clearly, somebody made a bad call. At least made a call that Fromber disagrees wholeheartedly with. So I don't have a problem with the best player that I got at this point in time on the team getting a tad bit frustrated with what's going on right now, and voicing an opinion in the public like this. Now if he just started naming people and throwing people under the bus and all that kind of deal, then maybe I would have had a little bit of a problem with it. But this is, it appears to me, just a bad call that he didn't like at the time and voiced his opinion.
Yeah, I guess so. 713-572-4610. Those of you on YouTube and Twitch as well. Do you have any issue with Fromber speaking publicly about this and going into detail about the right fielder playing center field, and we've got a center fielder for that, and essentially placing blame for that run coming across? And at all, does that make you concerned about what's going on in the clubhouse? Because that's not something we have normally seen from this Astros team. That was, I'll be honest with you, Clint, I was borderline shocked when I saw him go into that level of detail about how upset he was. I mean, I can understand that he is upset. Now, I'll be honest with you, I don't have a problem with it, but I can see how people in the locker room, Clint, would be like, "Hey, man, you ain't no coach. You ain't no man. Don't come out and say, well, you know, whoever put this alignment together, or why was the right fielder playing in center field?" I wonder, Clint, if that would have been his response if they weren't on a 5-game losing streak and they weren't struggling and the team offensively ain't hitting worth a damn, Clint, aren't scoring any run, and now you're butchering it in the field and costing us runs. I just wonder if that's all a part of it.
Oh, I mean, yeah, look, I don't doubt that the frustration is part of you know, voicing that, having that kind of response immediately following a game. Hell, you ought to be frustrated. I mean, they should be frustrated at this point in time. I mean, you're on a 21-game run where it's been ugly. You don't have a lot to hang your hat on. You're letting a lead in the division that was a real advantage. You're letting that thing not just dwindle. You're letting that thing slide pretty quick by losing 5 games straight. So yeah, they should be a little bit frustrated. And then look, I look at the call, and I'm no advanced stat guy. I don't typically tend to agree with all these major shifts. I look at it, and if I'm Fromber Valdez, it's so egregious, I don't know how you don't question it. Like, it's such a silly-ass shift, I don't know how you don't question it. I really don't. I don't know how you, like, the only way to question it is say, well, hell, Fromber, what, shouldn't have thrown a pitch that was inside that could have been pulled the way that it was pulled. So, look, it seems so egregious that I don't have a problem with him voicing his opinion.
Yeah, I guess for me, I just hope that this isn't something that is leading to some sort of fracture in the locker room, some sort of fracture in the clubhouse, something like pitchers versus, because when you struggle scoring runs like this, there have been, I've heard stories of pitchers and offensive players, they're just being a straight up divide, almost in a similar fashion, Clint, when you play football, and if your offense keep scoring and the defense can't stop nobody, and we lose games like
Joe
the Bengals
Burrow.
Are losing games.
Oh, yes!
Yes, and the way Bengals are losing games, sometimes there may be a fracture potentially building between those different sides of the ball, and in this case, between the pitchers and the hitters. So hopefully that is not the case. Someone on the text line coming through, I don't have a problem with it. He didn't say anyone's name. That's called scouting report. He should know the tendencies of opposing hitters. Come on, that's high school. He should be yelling about the abysmal showing on offense. So I could see a lot of people just being frustrated with this team at the plate and the offense coming forward. But it is to me unique and not a normal thing seeing a pitcher come right after the game, because to me that was probably more towards the coaching staff, because I don't think the players are the ones who are making the call or the decisions. I don't think Trammell is the one who said, you know what, I'm going to decide to line my ass up all the way over here, damn near in the gap, right in center field, and, you know, Jacob Melton slide himself almost damn near in front of the Crawford boxes. That was obviously planned ahead of time. So that was almost him really questioning the coaching staff.
Agreed. Yeah. And I have no problem. Something silly like that happens, I have no problem with it.
Say, go for it. Your ass going to make that call? Somebody needs to point it out in public right there.
Yeah, don't put it on me. Don't tell I shouldn't have threw the ball inside. I mean, hell, that ain't on me. That's a silly ass alignment they got out there.
Feels huge.
I can't imagine how mad Framber was. Oh my God! For him, like he came out in the sixth.
I wonder if he ripped any of his fake hair out.
He should have. Just think about it. He came out in the sixth inning, and that's as cooled down as he got to do the post game interview to come out and mention it. You would think that he would have maybe cooled himself down just a tad, but nope. That's how pissed off he was that he continued to run with that thing. All right, coming up, good luck to those who are following Tyler Milner. We'll see if he can get in the green.
God bless your soul.
As he said, these Mondays have been rough, and they continued yesterday in the red. Hopefully he can get into the green. And we've got to start to talk about who is really the star and has been the best player in this camp. And we'll hopefully check to see how the O-line was today, because steps forward, improvement today. We'll discuss that coming up next, right here live on The Drive.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, welcome back in. As it's been a fun day, thanks for a lot of the birds and the bees thoughts and advice. Yeah, that'll be a fun conversation.
Did you settle on just letting Tyler handle that for you?
Hell no. Not Tyler.
It'd be fun.
No, but I am going to go get some props. But anyway, appreciate that. That was a fun conversation as we had earlier. Check the Odyssey app. You can find that as well. Coming up behind us, Texans All Access, Mark Vandermeer, John Harris, and they will be joined by Hannah and Cal McNair. So stay tuned as the owners of the Houston Texans will be live on Texans All Access.
Does this count as us being on your show?
No, Hannah.
No, hell no. Hell no. Not at 6, but it does count as you being on Texans All Access with Mark Vandermeer, John Harris. So stay tuned to hear from the owners coming up right after us. Area 45, as usual, will follow them as they are looking. Sometimes I get on the old laptop and I run past that text line, and they've been a little rough here since the Astros have been on this slide. They're looking for a good night on the post game show, Area 45. Stay tuned for that. They will have that for you, get you ready for the game, and also get you ready after the game as well, and talk about some training camp. It is the best night program here in all of Houston, so make sure you stay tuned for that. Mr. Sean Bajani, Patrick Creighton, Chris Santiago, they have it after Texans All Access. And, well, Clint, Tyler's going to try it again. He's got T-Bills.
Give it a swing, huh?
Yeah, he's giving it a swing, man. Clint, before you even try, I'm certain he does not have room yet. So
that's for damn sure.
So that's one to look at as T-Mills' best bets. I love it. He won't quit. He won't give up. I don't know.
Well, but just wait.
I don't know what that means for his pocketbook.
You'll see, but I ain't going to quit. You'll see.
I know you're not going to quit. Maybe you might. Might
take a quick break.
Maybe take a quick break, but you ain't going to quit. So that's coming up here in a couple of minutes. All right, Clint. If I were to tell you, being at mandatory minicamp, but especially training camp, as we are 7 days in, 6 days of camp, would you agree that Kalen Bullock has been the clear best player in camp?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, he's been the best player in camp. His play has jumped off the field multiple times. There's no denying it. If you're out there and you're watching practice, there's no misunderstanding it, from interceptions to near interceptions to you know, bang bang plays, pass breakups where you would have taken the head off of a tight end, just bouncing around and appearing to know the game, the defense inside and out, and be very, very comfortable. We've seen zone defense make impact plays. We've seen him in man defense make impact plays. It's nonstop. But yeah, I would say Bullock is the biggest, brightest spot in this training camp across the board on both sides of the football. Yes.
Yeah, it is really impressive, Clint, to see the potential of what he'll be. We talk about a lot of players, and for good reason. Talk about a lot of players, from Will Anderson to Derek Stingley. What kind of step will they take as Pro Bowl, All Pro level? Kamari Lassiter is a guy we have talked about and looked at and thought could be a special player. But that Kalen Bullock, he is. He may lead the league in interceptions. I just thought of it as you were talking about it, and we discussed this a little bit, but you kept saying that about players on the offensive side of the ball, the Jalen Noel, like, boy, the ball finds them.
Yeah.
The ball finds them. And there are safeties that have been like this, and I'm not saying he's these guys, but you know there are safeties where it's like, damn, I know they're avoiding Ed Reed, but how the hell does he keep being by the ball? I know they're avoiding Tyrann Mathieu, but he seems to always find himself around the ball. And that seems to happen with Kalen Bullock. I don't know how many times I've watched or you have said, yep, Kalen Bullock got his hands on the ball again. Kalen Bullock undercut that route. And we watched him last year in part-time play get 5 picks and could have had more and get around the ball, and that was with him still learning. So he is one of the other guys that we're maybe not talking about that could be a Pro Bowl level player that has the potential of that, because I think he is what people call a ball hawk and a magnet to the football.
Yeah, I think you're right on all fronts. Then I'll double down with it of the pass rush that the Texans bring to the table. There's going to be somebody that benefits greatly in this secondary. I think teams are going to go away from Stingley. There's only so many places that you can put your corner number two, which is Lassiter. You know where he's going to be. I think the freebies, if you will, are going to fall in the hands of Kalen Bullock a lot. I think he can play center field. He can rotate down into zone coverages and be more of a robber type guy. He can roll down and play man as well versus tight ends and bigger wide receivers, which is the interception today, I believe, was against Higgins. If I saw it right, he undercut a slant route type of situation. The guys you mentioned, Honey Badger, Ed Reed, it's interesting that they're safeties, because you can call coverages to move those guys around and present problems from different places, from different depths, from different angles, where you can't always do that with a corner. I think Bullock has a real chance to be the guy that benefits the most from this defensive front that's going to be able to rush the passer, or should be able to rush the passer as well as anybody out there.
Yeah, real quick before we get to T-Mill's best bets, Clint, what did you see personally yourself from the number one talking point of this team, the offensive line? What did you see today from the offensive line?
Well, I thought the offensive line was better. Now, I can't obviously, without watching the film, tell you if that was because the ball was coming out on time and the quarterback wasn't forced to hold the ball, or was the actual protection better. Probably a little bit of both. There were several penalties, false starts that aren't going to sit well with the head coach. They're not going to sit well with Nick Caley. They're damn sure not going to sit well with the O-line coach. So they got to get that nipped in the bud. But overall, I think it was a better day. I think they've been overwhelmed. I think they've been thinking a lot. I think they've been, really just dismantled by the pass rush that I just got through talking about. And today seemed to be... the plan seemed to be, let's protect those guys a little bit, and it worked out. It worked out positively for the offense. Now, some of that might have been, hey, DBs, let's back off a little bit and not play so let's not suffocate them. Let's back off a little bit, give a little room underneath, let them see and taste a little bit of success. I don't know. I'm not saying that is, but that could have been part of it. But overall, to answer your question, I think the offensive line was better today than it's been in the past.
Yeah, I saw multiple reports that, hey, pass protection is a lot better today. Pass pro is a lot better, more time. But also to your point, and I think this has got to be a strategy for the Texans, a lot of it was met with protecting the offensive line. Short drops, quick throws, getting the ball out. And that is going to be, I think, a hallmark of what they're going to do. But the only other part that's concerning is, all right, when teams, they ain't going to just keep letting you do that. And then they're going to try to push you. And then will the Texans' O-line be able to hold up when they've got to make deeper throws?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, we're not seeing from the Texans right now is to line up in any given formation and just go, hey, if I get Kamari Lassiter, hell, or Derek Stingley for that matter, I'm fixing to throw a go route to Nico Collins. Or we're going to scheme things up to get a pick route and get Nico up the sideline, or some kind of little pick concept that's going to get Kirk the football. You're not really seeing those. They may be trying to execute those kind of things. We're not really seeing much of it. And so, you know, in their defense, they're working on something. They're not game planning for this defense that they're up against. But it wouldn't shock me if you didn't see some of that in the future. You got to start being a little bit more aggressive. You got to start, you know, backing these guys off a little bit, or they're just going to continue to suffocate. So, it's the battle, man. They're going against a really, really good defense every day in practice. Sure, it's going to make life easier on Sundays more times than not. But boy, this as I said many a time, this installation is going to be an absolute bear when a lot of the reps you're getting is against those guys.
All right, T Mill, let's get it. Let's get the your best bets. Let's get what you got, a good five in tonight?
Yeah, got five more. Two for five last night.
That sounds so confident.
I got about 7% confidence in myself on bets right now. You might want to fade these. And I told Dirty Red, we kind of previewed this and took a shot at it last week, and then all of a sudden I hit some bets. If I'm red again tonight, tomorrow's Clint Sterner's best bets board.
What?
Oh, my.
Tomorrow will be Sterner's best bets board, all of them.
I want you to win, man. I really do, but damn, that'd be fun.
We will see if the red days roll on. I really need some green, guys. Five best bets. First, Brewers. -1.5 runs tonight at +155. Really like those odds as they host the Chicago Cubs. Next up, I got the Cardinals. St. Louis money line at -155 as well. They are hosting the Miami Marlins. Got an over for you. Marlins, same game. Marlins at Cardinals, over 7.5 runs in that one. They're not expecting a lot, but that is just too low a number to me. And then two unders to polish this Tuesday of best bets out. Blue Jays and Orioles, they're playing a doubleheader today, under 10 in the game two between the Blue Jays and Orioles tonight, and then the Mariners and Athletics, under 10.5 runs in the late game tonight around Major League Baseball. Those are your best bets for the love of God.
I clearly see something here, Clint.
There's no Astros.
Tyler's thrown in the towel. Oh, my God. We're it.
I don't know. I truly just do not know which direction to go with this freaking squad and half of them being Space Cowboys.
This is
– like, I'm still with my Stros. I'm riding with them. I want them to win tonight. I think they might win tonight, maybe.
But you're backing off.
Oh, like, yeah.
You're completely backing the hell off.
I need them to focus on just winning baseball games and not winning me money.
Damn, Doug.
That's
I'm sorry
real.
About that, man. That's tough. All right, man. If T Mill's in the red tomorrow, Clint Sterner's best bets.
Dirty.
Stern's best.
Dirty's daily bets. Coming at you.
Daily bets. We got a couple of names. Look at a couple of names. All right. Clint, great job as always. Tyler, great job as always. Even with your bets, you really tried.
Those haven't been very great.
Great job as always. I am Ron, the show. As always, Houston, we love you, baby.
Nobody went to sex ed class and learned that there was two testes and went, oh boy, I better not do that.
I think it's better to have the information and at least to scare their asses. The information.
Well, let me tell you,
educational program.
I mean, if the appearance of the male and female anatomy for the first time doesn't scare you, then I don't know what the hell does. I mean.
Tyler, I love you too, man. You so H-Town.